Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. Oh, boy. You are the first folks I talked to today. And as you can imagine, that's how come I sound so stupid. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We got two callers, but I got a little bit of business to take care of first. Action Auto Repair, Tom, who owns Action Auto Repair. Tom, who's been around since 1983, is at I-17 in Deer Valley Northwest Corner. I've known Tom since the early 80s. That's important because I've known some shop owners that I probably won't ever refer to. There's a lot of them out there that are good guys. But I typically won't comment on that on the show. But you can go to marksalem.com and see my list of best repair shop, and certainly Tom's on it. He's been around a long time. He has ASC certified technicians. And he wants to make sure you understand what repairs he's suggesting. And it's not uncommon for him to take you into the shop and show you. So if you're up near I-17 in Deer Valley and you don't have a repair shop, I would probably stop by Action, get an oil change, and see how you like them and so forth and so on. Let's go to the phones. First, let me explain something to you real quick. YouTube drives me crazy because you have no idea the volume of email I get. And I got one just the other day. I got this vehicle, and this is what I've done. Boom, 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 boom. And so my response is always, so is it fixed? No. Well, how do you expect me to fix it over the internet? How do you expect me to fix it over the telephone when you've already gone to YouTube and had all these other guys guess? That's not, and I'm not saying that because I want you to come in and have your car repaired. I'm saying it to the those of you that work on your own cars, there's a time and a place for you to raise the white flag and go get somebody else to diagnose it. You can fix it, but look them in the eye and say, I'm paying for a diagnosis, right? I don't want to pay for a guess. Then the problem is if you put the part in and the problem's still there, then somebody's got to figure out what the problem really is and fix it in order to find out who's wrong. Did the customer install the part wrong? Did he get a part that is substandard, or did the shop misdiagnose it? So those are the plans. Those are the things that we have to deal with. Joe, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning. I'm one of those guys that the flag's just about to come up, but I wanted to talk to you first.
Sure.
So I've got this older car. It's a 53 Mercury, and I'm having carburation problems, I believe. I took it to the shop I usually go to, and they're not that well-versed on older cars, and they adjusted the float, and then that didn't take care of it. What was happening is when you accelerate it, it would stumble. If you punched down hard, it was fine, but if you just give a normal acceleration, it would stumble. So they said, if you know a good carburation place, take it there. And when I bought the car, the guy gave me all his records. The carburetor had just been rebuilt by a local rebuilder here who I've used and I think is good. So I took it back there. They also adjusted the float, gave it back to me. I put it on, and it still stumbled. Then I went to have some other work done at one of your shops, and I asked them if they would please give me what they thought that was. They said accelerator pump. They were quite sure. So, and they also said take it back. It's under warranty. So I did, and they went through all the process and said they even put it on an engine and ran it, and it's fine. Well, then I put it back on, and, of course, it stumbled again. Now, since then, I've been trying to drive around hoping it will drive out, which is probably not going to happen. And it's begun to stumble. It almost feels like it runs out of gas. After I get going down the road, if let's say the bowl was full, and I go ahead and accelerate crisply, it takes right off, and then all of a sudden it's just like it runs out of gas. And I can let it coast for a while, and it'll go again. And then eventually it ends up bucking like a bucking Bronco. So I went ahead and put a filter in between the fuel pump and the carburetor, a clear one, to see gas was going through, and I put a gauge on there. I've got 5 psi of fuel pressure. I should be between 3.5 and 4.5, according to my manual. But doggone it keeps stumbling. Can
okay.
you help me out?
Okay. Yeah. Gosh darn. So this whole conversation for the last 2.5 minutes is because you've diagnosed it as a gas problem.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm thinking to myself out loud. He's got a mid-range stumble, but he didn't say anything about wide open throttle. As a matter of fact, he said, if I really stomp on it, it goes great. So I'm thinking to myself, how can that be a fuel starvation problem? How can that be a fuel problem at all? If he just gently, like, wait a minute, it's my turn. If he just gently throttles up, then da-da-da, he's got this stumble, whatever it is.
Yes.
But on wide open throttle, boom, he doesn't have it. So how can that be a fuel starvation problem? How can that be an accelerator pump problem? And how could that be a float problem without the symptoms associated with each one? The float problem causes black smoke. The float problem causes all kinds of gas coming out of the vent on the carburetor. You don't have that. You didn't say anything about smelling gas all over the top of that motor. The accelerator pump is the stumble every time you hit the throttle. Every time. So we've got all these dynamics, and then you do a PSI and a gauge and everything like that, and you still haven't fixed it. I don't think it's fuel. You've already convinced me that it's ignition. So
okay.
I think you need to go after the ignition system. I think you need to go in there and replace the points and condenser. I think you need to go in there and verify that either the mechanical or the vacuum advance is working. I think you need to verify on the vacuum vacuum diagram, are we feeding ported vacuum to that distributor or manifold vacuum? Now, let me explain. Ported vacuum is... Do you know the answer to that?
No, I said please explain.
Okay.
I was going to say, I don't know what you're talking about.
Ported vacuum at idle doesn't have any vacuum. So what that means is the port is above the throttle blades. The throttle blades are closed at idle, so therefore this port above the throttle blades has no suck. Manifold vacuum is below the throttle blades, so if you pull that line off at idle, it's going to be live. It's going to have vacuum. So you need to check the vacuum operation. Now, it's possible that we're running the vacuum line through a temperature switch, and then the temperature switch is going to open up when it gets warm and then give vacuum to the distributor. In your 53, I don't think we have that, but we did have that in older Fords. So I think it's an ignition problem. I think... Bad core. Now, see, I'm going to start guessing things, and you're going to go out and put them in.
No. I'm okay. Like I said, the white flag's ready to come up. I'm going to go back to the shop that you recommended to me for another problem, and I'm sure they'll fix it. But I thought, I got to give this a shot.
So. Okay. No, and it's okay. It's okay. It's okay for you to guess with your money. It's not okay for us to guess with your money.
Sure.
So, timing, coil, distributor, distributor cap. The condenser usually causes a backfire when it's bad, but if you're going to put points and condenser in it, you do both of them.
Sure.
But I think you have an ignition. It could be that you have no advance. It could be that you have too much advance. Now, you take the cap off and you grab a hold of the rotor, obviously when it's not running, and you just rotate the rotor clockwise and counterclockwise, and there should be a spring effect. So one way it should go, and then you let go, boom, and it goes back. That means the mechanical weights are good.
Okay.
Then
that was going to be my other question for you.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
That's the advance. Now, another thing I do is I put a timing light on it, and I just bring it up slowly and all the way up and watch the timing mark and see if I'm getting any advance. Now, I think you're getting some because you say it throttles up good when it's hard. So I'm thinking you've got, you know what? I'll buy your wife lunch if this isn't an ignition problem.
Okay.
But too many guys have done that, and I'm trusting that those guys are really good guys, but two of them, none of them have touched your problem. None of them have touched your problem. So I'll buy your
Can
wife
I give
lunch.
Give you an attaboy?
No. Did I hit it right?
No. I got from the last time I called you.
Okay.
I wanted to give you an attaboy, but I don't want to interrupt you either.
No. Go ahead. I'm
okay.
You can have the rest of the hour.
I called 2 weeks ago, and I had a gasket on it, and the gas was leaking through every one of those six screws. They'd run a metric screw down in what appeared to be a 12-24, a thread.
Sure.
And gas was coming by. I couldn't believe such a thing could happen, but it did. But if you wouldn't have pointed me in that direction, I'd have been at a shop paying a lot of money.
And
so I thank you very much.
You're more than welcome. You're more than welcome. Yeah, I'm only as good as the input you give me. I'm only that good. Now, I'm not condemning you on the bull on your car, but you gave me so much when you talked about the gas leak. You looked in here. You're looking in here. I asked you about heavy. I didn't say about heavy float, but I asked you symptoms of a heavy float.
Right.
So, you know, it's and I'm just going to mark today. Mark one. and so forth. I'll go Mark 1 and then so forth. So anyway, thank you very much, Joe. Thank you for the compliment.
Well, thank you for being on okay. Saturday mornings.
All right. Okay? All righty. Thank you very much for the compliment. All righty. Alex, you're up next.
Hey, Mark. Thank you for taking my call.
You 2 minutes.
So I have a 95 Toyota Camry, and recently I had to change the battery, and I went to AutoZone, and I got the battery. It turned out it was sort of the right battery for my car, but I just had to flip it around because the posts were on the wrong side. But I have a good battery in it now that I got from Costco. It's on the first try, they gave me the right one. But when I put in that other battery, I noticed that when I started my car up and I put it into gear, the car started jerking. And it does that in the first thing in the morning when I start it up and it's ice cold, and I start it up and when I put it into gear immediately, it'll start jerking. But when the car is warm or in the middle of the day, it doesn't do that whatsoever.
Okay. Well, I don't think that's a battery symptom I've ever heard.
1 minute.
Yeah, I didn't think it was, but I just noticed that it was only right after I did that.
Okay, this is your fault. You're the only one that had the hood open, right?
I work on my car.
Okay, can't blame it on your wife. I think what you did is in the process of doing the battery, and I don't care that the post the positives on the left or the positives on the right, because it's a difference between a 24 and a 24F, and F stood for Ford, because Ford is so much different. Nevertheless, you probably knocked off a vacuum line. You probably did something during the installation of the battery that's caused this problem. This isn't going to be hard to find. Just go back in there and look at the vacuum lights, look at all the hoses, look at all the electrical connections, make sure that you have everything back the way it was, and I'll bet you got a 50-50 chance of you finding out the mistake you made, and I've got a 50-50 chance of guessing that you pulled the vacuum line off somewhere and you didn't even know you did it. Because the symptoms you have is fall on your face and stuff, is a vacuum leak and a rough idle and all that kind of stuff. So that's what I would suggest you do. Why don't you do this? Why don't you go out and look and then call me back and see if I can hit 2 home runs today. Anyway, thank you, Alex, very much. The lines are open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. You're listening to the Under the Hood Car Show. And I'm the host and have been on radio since 1988. Been around the block, got some gray hair, been a master technician for more than 35 years. My wife is sitting here next to me. She just got back from shopping and has nothing nice to say. So you just sit right there and be quiet.
Okay, good. Just making sure you're behaving yourself.
And then that's not going to happen today.
I know.
Nevertheless.
Never does.
No. I'm doing my best. Anyway, been around, and I think we've demonstrated that symptoms are really important. Symptoms. Now, the guys will come in, and most of the time will tell us what to fix. And as a shop owner, you're scared. You don't know, because if you don't do what they said, then you run a risk of making them mad. But if you do what they said, and then the problem isn't solved, then you run a risk. The shop owner runs a risk of having you think that you didn't know what you were doing. Women. I wish I could just have all women.
Yep, we're better.
And that's true. And here's what happens now. Folks, I'm real familiar with an eye roll. My daughter, my wife, even my granddaughters know how to eye roll when Papa talks to them. But when a woman walks in, a woman, and she says, "My husband says," what do you do? You're at the front counter. What do you do?
Yeah, I'm not at the front counter that much, but I usually ask him the symptoms because that's the best way to get it. And who drives the car? Does she drive the car? Does he drive the car? Because a lot of times the husbands will guess, and they don't even drive the car. So it's better to talk to the driver most of the time.
Don't minimize your time. We've been working since 1979 together in the auto repair field.
Yes.
You've handled the front counter up until recently pretty much.
Yeah.
However long that is. So, but you're right. The only question you left out is, can you duplicate the problem right now?
Yes.
Because that's when you pull a tech off the floor. Usually one that smells good. Usually one that brushed his teeth in the morning. Usually one that doesn't smoke. Those kinds of things. But that's all those are points.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me tell you real quick about Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. He's a great shop. He is a top-line shop, as all of my best car repair shops are. Larry, and I think his name was Jeremy, he's a master tech in every ASC test that can be taken, and I'm not. I'm only in the 8 automotive. He's got paint and big trucks and motorhomes and airplanes, and I'm being facetious there. But he's a good guy. So if you're anywhere near 38th Avenue and Indian School, Harker's is the best place to go. And if you have a problem that nobody else can fix and you're in the northeast or northwest area, go to Harker's and see if Bob can take care of it. Let's go to the phones. Tyler, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
He's
listening.
Tyler, you need to turn off your radio and just talk to me, because we're on a delay in case I say any bad words.
I'm sorry, Mark. How you doing?
Okay, good. Just tell her to sit right there, okay?
I have an old 76 C20, and I've called you a few times before. You give such great advice. And I'm looking at putting an AC system in, and I'm just curious if you have any advice on what to go with.
Oh, what kind of system?
Air conditioning.
An air conditioning system.
Okay. I'd go with just the factory stuff. I mean, you could, there's a vintage air conditioning that I've seen that I really like. But hanging an A6 on there with some hoses and taking the dashboard apart behind the glove box and putting an evaporator and... And you probably already have dash vents already?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Yep.
So there's some plumbing that goes on. That's a little bit more difficult, but that puts it back original. I think you called the other day and was talking about putting four-wheel drive and stuff in it. So if it's not really original truck, then I would just put vintage air in it, and I'd call around and just price the installation of vintage air in your car. Now, soup to nuts, out the door. That's what you want. And then you want a list of what they're going to replace. It should be they're going to install a condenser, a compressor, an evaporator, and all the metering devices. Plus, they're going to convert your fan motor to blow into it, and they're going to have to put a blend door in there so you can get cold when you want and hot when you want. You can understand that's a big job.
And are you talking not the R12, but the 134 or the new YXYZ or whatever it is?
It's 1234. 1234 is very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the newer model cars. The 12, although we have some and some of us old guys have it, it's very expensive.
Yeah, that would be a good idea.
Because we're not going to sell that cheap because there's no more of it.
Right.
And then number two is... The best is 134. Now, we just converted that 89 Suburban from a 12 to 134, and
right.
That thing blows ice cubes out of the vents.
Yeah.
So he should go to 134, and that would be his best option. He wants to stay away from 12 and don't take the 1, 2, 3, 4, because we're having tough times with that. Okay?
Gotcha. Well, thank you, Mark, very much.
All right. Hey, wait a minute. Your wife was sitting there next to you, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Is she okay with all this money you're spending on a truck that's like 400 years old?
Well, you know, it's...
that's a no.
I've never really asked. I've been scared of the answer.
Listen, join the rest of us, okay? I bought an old Suburban the other day, an 89 Suburban, and it's a hunting wagon.
Nice.
Extraordinaire. Listen to this. 3/4 ton, 5-speed. You know how many 5-speed Suburbans they made? And somebody dropped in a 5.7 fuel-injected motor, 3 fuel tanks, winch front and rear, air conditioning. I gave it to my staff, tires, brakes, da-da-da. They put 134 in it. They said it, and they're true. It blows ice cubes out the vents. Everything on this truck is good. And there wasn't anybody in my family that didn't think I was crazy.
Yeah, Tyler, he got an eye roll on that one, I can tell you that for sure.
I would have been excited.
This thing has just, I mean, think about it, a fuel-injected 89 with a 5-speed low-range front and rear winches, it's $8,500 right now, because that's pretty much what I have into it. But the idea is that thing is so special, but your C20 can be the same way. You put vintage air in it, and maybe you do a nice wrap, and make it look really pretty, you got a lot of options. But I'm not going to take your side, Tyler, because I'm more afraid of your wife than I am you.
You're spending his money, yeah.
Yeah. All righty. Thank you, Tyler. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. I'm ready.
Say hello to Mark.
Mark. How are you?
Hey, cool. Hey. We'll have an echo, Mark. This is Mark.
Yes, yes.
No, I'm just kidding. Not an echo. Echo, just echoing names. Just being silly. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, speaking of vintage air, you know, I'm going to date myself before I even tell you what I called. Back in the 70s, I was a little kid, maybe, whatever, 6-year-old kid. Guess what my folks had in their pickup truck? They had, in the cab, an evaporative cooler.
Oh, boy.
Did you remember those? They actually made evaporative coolers you can mount in the, like, hanging off the dashboard.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember.
You've seen that, too? Yeah. I bet you nobody on the air has seen that. You and me.
Well, I'll tell you something else we used to do. And I'm up against a break, but I'm going to hang on to you, sure that you break. But I'll tell you something else we used to do. We used to take on the cars that run hot, and there was a particular problem, the customer, we used to take the windshield washer motor, we'd put a big tank there, we'd take the nozzles and put them in front of the radiator, so when it got hot, you pushed a button, it'd spray water on the radiator and bring the temperature down. So you stay right there, because I'm 30 seconds away from having to take a break. Gil uses really bad words when I miss the 30 on the button. So like right now, it's 36, 37, so we're about 20 seconds away from the 30, and I have to talk my way all the way to the 30, otherwise he gets mad. 602-508-0960. Lines are wide open except for Mark. 602-508-0960. I'm killing some time. Yeah. 602-508-0960. I'm Mark Salem. This is 960 The Patriot.
All about that.
34 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock. Mark and Renee Salem here at your service, 602-508-0960. Kurtz Auto Repairs at I-17 and Bell Road on the northeast corner. Been in business for since 1987. Does gas and diesel. Kurtz a master, Eric's a master, and Jeff's a master. And between those three guys, I'm not quite sure that they wouldn't be in the top three group of all of Phoenix. They are really, really good. So anywhere near Bell, I-17, northeast corner, you don't have a shop, can I suggest that you try Kurtz? Mark, let's finish up our conversation. What you got?
Hey, okay. Yeah, I'll get to the point. I was just goofing around at first.
Okay.
But it's an easy one for you because it's not a diagnosis problem.
Okay.
Yay!
Yeah.
So I have that insurance that you pay by the mile. It's talking to the diagnostics part of your car all the time, and it sends you a message on your computer, hey, there's these codes on your car, you need to get it fixed, okay?
Okay.
And I don't care what the codes are, so I go to it's a Nissan 3-year-old Altima, but like 65,000 miles on it. So I go to the dealer, and I ask them to fix my cruise control, but they said, we're not going to look at your cruise control because you got the engine light on, so they go check that out. And they want to spend over $1,000 on it. The car drives fine. Fuel mileage is between 33 to 36 because I'm putting a lot of freeway miles on it. So I don't have a performance problem. I don't have a gas mileage problem. I don't want to spend $1,000 on an engine code.
Well,
it's time to get a second opinion.
Okay.
So where do you recommend to get a second? Because they said they found a TSB about.
Okay.
Okay.
A technical service bulletin is open to all of us. It's not like a recall. We can all do technical service bulletins. I don't think it's within industry standards to pick the most expensive and tell you they can't do the less expensive. I don't think that's and I am an expert, a court-certified expert in industry standards. So I'm just telling you right now, that idea stinks, and I'd rather be on
the air. That's why I need that.
Okay.
Where do I go?
What part of town are you in?
Of Chandler. West side of Chandler. Southwest, like south of Chandler Boulevard, west side.
Okay.
Nowhere near Bell Road.
Okay, okay. There's nobody south of the river except me. So if you want to take it to my shop, you can. In Warner and I-10, it's the same as my last name. Let me explain something to you. Let me explain something to you. You can do whatever you want. But here's the deal. We need to chase the check engine light And that may fix the cruise control. So if we have a check engine light because it's running lean and we have a vacuum leak that's disabling the cruise control, boom, 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 we're done. They're going to quote you $125 plus or minus to do a diagnostic. Then they're going to call you with an estimate that's to the penny. So they're going to say, dit, 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 and you won't spend any more than $139 or whatever it is. Then you can say, I want to fix that first, and then I want to make sure you fix that. So I want my car back, and I want to drive it for 7, 10, 14 days. And then, if you fixed it, I'm going to reward you with the cruise control. That's how you handle it. And you do that with me and everybody else. That makes sense?
You may not be driving it for, I could put basically 20, 30, 100 miles on it, and that check light will stay off.
Okay.
Right, after it's fixed.
I understand, but it's not fixed. It's just the computer has to see this situation numerous times. And so when we reset the light or you pull the negative cable or do whatever you want to do, then the light has to see that situation again and again and again. Boop, then it comes on. The light is yellow, means it's not an important thing. It you're not going to pass emissions with that light on. But yellow means continue to drive and you're okay. So that's what I would do if I were you, is let's deal with the cruise, or let's deal with the engine light first. And the code doesn't tell us anything. The code tells us that the problem's in Ohio. We got to find the city, the street, and the house number and the zip code. So we have O2 sensors all the time, and it's a vacuum leak or the fuel filter's plugged. So tell me what the relationship is between an O2 sensor. It's screaming lean, and the fuel filter and the vacuum leak are causing it. So you got to fix that, and replacing the messenger is a waste of time. I got to run, but thank you very much. Mark, Ted, you're up next.
Hey, Mark, how's it going?
I'm good.
I have two 16-ounce, one-pound cans of the R12. What do you think I can sell those for? Because I heard you just say that they're expensive and there isn't a lot out there.
Yeah. What part of town do you live in?
Tatum and Bell area.
Okay, call Blackwell at 40th and Greenway and ask him, because he does a lot of old car work like we do. And just say, Salem says each one of these cans is worth like $100. I'm not thinking they're worth that much, so how much do you want to buy two 16-ounce can of R12? If you want to do a comparison, you can call Jeff at our facility and say to Jeff, give me an idea what you're buying R12 as. And Jeff buys R12. He's our parts manager. So you can talk to Blackwell, or you can talk to us, either one.
All right, maybe I can work and trade. But my other question was, my friend had a little drip of gas out of his gas tank, and a guy said, put a screw with a rubber gasket on it. And I said, that's stupid. We'll find something else. And an old man said, take ivory soap and rub it on the hole, and it hasn't dripped in 2 years. Does that make any sense to you?
That is one of the old things that worked sometimes. Worked. And no, you're absolutely right. You don't change the girl you're taking to the dance. You know what I mean? Is that how you say it?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You're not supposed.
We're talking about soap here, so I'm not sure.
No, there's a saying that has to do with you go with the girl that got you to the dance.
You don't not dance with the girl you brought to the dance, something like that.
No,
always
you don't dance.
No, that's what he said. Okay. You don't not dance with her.
Oh, if you're going to take her,
yeah,
you better do.
He doesn't know.
Someone will call and straighten me out.
Okay.
But anyway, Ted, that's what I do. Blackwell, Salem, call. Call them up, bid them against one another. You don't want to drive too far. Blackwell will buy it for you. Just tell him I said it's $100 a can. All righty, I got to run. John Lee, you guys stay right there. We'll be right back. Forty-three minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and we're talking about cars. You're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960.
And just kind of explain about the soap thing. I'm not sure what you were talking about, going to the dance, but...
Well, what's important about that is he said he rubbed the fuel tank with a bar of soap, and it worked for 2 years.
Right.
You got to go with that.
Right.
You know, there's no one can argue with the success of that.
Yeah.
Nobody. So if that worked for him, and I can tell you right now, he saved a lot of money.
Right.
I don't know how it's going to, but I'll tell you what I would say to him. Don't touch it.
Yeah.
Don't get underneath it with the rag. Don't reapply soap. Don't do nothing.
Just leave it alone. Yeah, exactly.
So, anyway, John, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark and Renee. Say, can I get your opinion on a 2012, or in general, the Volkswagen Eos, that's that retractable hardtop. mechanically, do you know, is that something to stay away from, or?
The most critical person of cars who believes he knows more about cars than Christ himself. But he's been in the banking business all his life. Is my older brother.
Yeah.
Right? He didn't hear that. It's his brother.
It's my older brother, and he had an EOS, and we worked on it, and he hated that car. He hated. Now, his level of perfect is a 10 out of 10.
Okay.
I want to tell you that parts are expensive. That car doesn't even represent a half a percent on all, a tenth of a percent of all the cars on the market. The retractable roof is a big problem when it breaks. There is no second chance. It's going to be a major ticket. And you'd buy it because of that. So I'm going to tell you that I don't want to work on them. I don't like to work on them. I don't like to be the bearer of bad news. I don't like to call somebody like a Jaguar the other day that we're going to have to – the hoses that go from the front of your car to your retractable roof are about $3,000 installed.
Oh, my God.
So I don't want to do that. But is there a second place, a second choice?
Well, yeah, I'm just looking for any kind of convertible. It's just that I read on this with the top down, the body could flex, and if it does flex. And if it does, you know, the retractable top is a nightmare, like you say.
Yeah.
But I wasn't sure about that. I was more worried about mechanically as far as the Volkswagen goes. You know, the funny thing is CarMax has it here, and they're asking for 14. And I thought that's high because I've looked on, like, Car and Driver, and they say their range is 8 to 9. So I just thought, is CarMax that far off?
No, I don't use CarMax. I want you to go to KBB.com.
CarMax is a resale, though, I think, isn't
it? I understand, but CarMax also sets pricing. I think that's what he's saying. Yes, KBB.com, and you download all the information as if you were selling it. Now, there's a little speedometer on the screen. It'll say wholesale, auction, and then it'll say private party, blah, blah, blah. And obviously, you're going to pick private party or trade-in or something in the middle. So I would do that, but when you said 14 for an EOS that's 6-7 years old, I'm thinking to myself,
can't be.
They've got $5,000 worth of pack in case he trades in a piece of crap.
Maybe.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All righty. Well, good luck to you.
I was looking.
Okay. Go ahead.
Well, I think
the foreign ones are so expensive. You know, I just want a convertible. And I can't fit in a lot of those little ones. So I happened to stumble across this, and it looks so sleek and neat. And I test drove it, and it drove good. But I thought it was way too high, and then I started reading it. I was concerned, like you said, about issues. So
okay, call me next week and give me choice 2, 3, and 4 on your convertible. Call me next week and give me...
How about a Volkswagen Bug? That was my other choice. But is that the same thing? I'm in the same hot one.
No, it doesn't have a retractable roof, and it's not anywhere near the technology that we have today. I'm a little confused on why you don't fit in a lot of cars, but you fit in a Volkswagen Bug and an EOS. But anyway, you just call me back and let me know. We got to move on. Lee. Lee, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'm new to your program here, and I heard it a couple of weeks ago. I know you were talking to somebody about a motorhome issue, and I've got a motorhome question. I hope you can answer it or tell me to go away if I'm in the wrong program or whatever.
I'm really good on motorhomes. I'm bragging right now. Go ahead and tell me. You're making model and symptoms.
I've got a 2000 Class A diesel motorhome, and it's 43 feet, and I tow a car behind it. And whenever I go to put diesel in, I've got to go to the full high flow pumps at like TA or Flying J or whatever.
Right.
And I can't get any fuel into the thing because it foams so much. I'm trying to figure out a way of venting it or whatever. I can't go to the regular diesel pumps to fill it because of I'm too big.
Okay. I don't know. You've stumped me because I don't know. Only thing I can think of is when we push gas in, fuel in, we got to get the vent out. And so we're pushing in and then we're sending. Now, most of the cars, gasoline cars, are going to send the fumes through a filter so we don't contaminate the air.
Right.
Diesel doesn't have fumes. What chassis is that? What motor you got in that?
I've got a 500 Cummins ISM.
Okay. And what brand is it?
What brand is the motorhome? Monaco.
Okay. I'm getting it now. I think what needs to happen, and I understand completely what you're talking about. First, you're a 43 and you're towing a car, getting into a service station is tough. But Flying J and what are those other guys that we always go to?
Pilot.
Pilot. And they all have gas, you know, fuel somewhere else. And the hard part is you and I know, when we pull in, we take up a lot of room, and we're going to take on big-time fuel. So we're going to be there
right.
a while. I understand. But I understand, too, the big nozzles versus the small nozzles. But if you're going to check anything, I would have somebody check the vent from the filler neck to wherever. Because it seems to me that we're shoving fuel in and it's spitting back because the air isn't going anywhere.
Well, I realize. I don't believe that there is any kind of venting other than just through the blowback through the filler neck.
Yeah, I don't agree with you because you're the first one. First of all, I've owned I don't know how many 40 footers with diesels in them, and I've never had your problem before. And I know those big nozzles will fill up a 60-gallon tank in no time at all. So I know the flow on the big nozzles. So I'm just saying the only possibility I can think of right now is that you've got a vent problem. But anyway, Lee, good luck to you. And call me back if I'm right, and call me back if I'm not right. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Who's next, Gil?
That would be Mark.
Mark to Mark.
Again.
Hey, Mark. Hey, I have a 2010 Caravan. I'm going to swap the transmissions in it because the one that's in there has got a code keeps popping up and then it goes into limp-in mode. So I've got another transmission out of a wrecked car I want to put in it. I'm going to do the work myself, and from what I understand on the Internet, it has to be reprogrammed before you attempt to drive it.
Well, no, you can well, it'll depend. If you start it up and it'll shift and drive, then the answer is yeah, we need to tell it. But I think you're making a big mistake. Of course, you've already bought the transmission. Well, because there is a 60% chance that this can be fixed without replacing the transmission. At least
I've
a 60%. Well, I know, but...
I've taken it to a shop and I've tried that.
I don't care. I don't care. What part of town do you live in?
West Valley?
Why don't you call Alger at ANS Transmissions and just talk to him? Just talk to him.
Okay.
The answer to your question The answer to your question is there's no way in God's green earth that you got the transmissions exactly like the one you took out of it. I mean, there's no way. Hopefully, it can be reprogrammed. Hopefully, we'll be successful in a transmission download. But if yours has an extra gear that other one doesn't, and it's because a 2000, whatever it is, a 2000 or a 10 Caravan split and the transmission's changed from 11 to 9, you're in big trouble. So all I'm saying to you is you took it to one shop and now you've jumped to replacing the transmission. I'm suggesting to you that there's 60% chance you're wrong and they're wrong. I think it would be better if you got to talk to somebody who knew those cars inside and out. That's why I'm sending you to Alger at ANS Transmissions. So I'm doing the best I can for you. All I'm saying is he'll talk to you. You can say, Mark Salem said to call you. Have your VIN number with you and give him your make and model. And also look at your production date on the sticker on your door. It'll say 10-10 or it'll say something like that. 9/10. And it was born in September of 10. So take that information and use that. Do that for yourself. Otherwise, the answer to your question is if it starts, runs, and moves, and all the gears are there, I don't think I'd reprogram anything. I think I'd just leave it alone. If there's a problem with that kind of problem, then you're going to spend money having somebody download the software, and if it's successful, you're home free, and if it works, you're home free. But if they can't download, you still have to pay for the download, or if they download and it still has the problem, you still got to pay for that. So there's some risk associated with that. Who's next?
That would be Richard.
Richard, good morning to you.
Hi, Mark. I've got an 01 GMC Sierra with 250,000 miles on it, and the ABS and the brake lights come on and off intermittently. They're on more than they're off, but it's been that way for the last few months. The brakes seem to work fine. There's fluid in the brake container. What do you think could be the wrong? Is the sensor bad or what?
Okay. The ABS light is yellow and the brake is red.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. The red means that that's serious. Yellow means caution. I think you're going in the wrong direction. I think we have a pressure problem, and I think mm-hmm. that the computer sees that, and it sees it in the hydraulic portion of your brake, and as a result of that, the ABS is trying to control tire speed, and it can't because there's no pressure or there's substandard pressure.
I see.
So I would hang – now, here, let me tell you what I'd do first, because that's the question you're asking me. Mark, what would you do first? Have you got a self-service car wash anywhere close to you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Get up early tomorrow morning. Go over to the self-service car wash and kind of clear out a way where it's kind of straight. Now, all car washes have slick concrete on them. I need that slick concrete. So you're going to drive through. Don't go through any of the wet bays, but kind of position yourself. Nobody's there. Accelerate normally and then lock the brakes up. Hard as you can, hit the brake pedal and get out and look at the skid marks. The back skid marks, the front skid marks should be a little shorter than the back ones, because the nose drops, puts pressure on the fronts, and the back end comes up. I want to see skids from all four wheels, and I want to see them even. Left and right front are even. Left rear and right rear are even. That will help you, because if you've got heavy skids on the front and no skids on the back, then we have a proportioning valve problem, we have a master cylinder problem, we have something like that. And I think the ABS is the symptom, but I think the problem is in the brake system, and that's why that light's red.
That's great. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. You're welcome. That's really cool that we got that much information.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool. Who's next?
That'll be Vicky.
Vicky, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. I have a problem with my 69 C10. I had a 70 C10 for, oh, my gosh, over 20 years.
Two minutes.
It started right up every day, because I drove it every day. The 69 has a six-cylinder. The 70 had an eight. The 69's got a one-pot carb. The 70 had a two. And, man, I only drive it, well, mostly drive it on Thursdays and weekends, and man, I have to crank and crank and crank to get it to start unless I've driven it within the previous couple hours.
Okay.
Something I noticed during the cranking is right before it turns over good, the aftermarket radio lights up.
Okay, it's in your best interest to wipe that off your chalkboard. One has nothing to do with the other. Absolutely nothing.
Okay.
But I do have an answer, but I'm not going to have time to give it to you. So here's what I want to do. When we come back, I'm going to ask you your starting procedure and give it to me quick.
1 minute.
What do you do first? And I want you to start with, I get in. You better say number two, I buckle my seatbelt. And then I put the key in, and then I do this, and then I do this, and then I do this. That's what I want to hear. And when we get back from our break at the top of the hour, you and I are going to talk about this. So I'm going to have Gil put you on hold, and that's going to work. We have open lines now, 602-508-0960. We have five lines. Vicky's got one, so that means we have four open. 602-508-0960. I bet I can fix Vicky's car.
Okay.
I know what's wrong with it.
Okay.
And it has nothing to do with Vicky, other than if her procedure's slightly wrong.
Okay.
But those old cars with those old carburetors, she called the right guy.
Yep. We have a lot of old cars today
working
on.
I worked my butt off on those, too.
Yep.
So anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Salem. Sitting here next to me is my wife, Renee. And we've been working on cars for a very long time. We'll be back. Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My wife wants me to remind you that I do not argue with my psychologist, my psychiatrist, my general practitioner, my veterinarian.
Oh, I don't know.
No, about their skills. I ask questions, but I don't challenge their skills because they are good and professional. Nevertheless, that's kind of what it is with car repair. It's kind of, let's talk about the symptoms. When I go in there, I don't tell them I need a lung transplant.
Okay.
I don't tell them I have cancer here or there. I tell him my head, according to my wife, my head is empty because she can look in one ear and see the building on the other.
Right.
Strictly Diesel's been around a long time. He's one of the few shops, there's only two, that really does good diesel work on my best car repair shops list. He's been around a very long time. He's on I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. They have a website open 24 hours a day where you can look at parts and that kind of hot rod stuff for your diesel. He works on all domestic and light duty trucks as well as foreign. So it's foreign and domestic light diesel trucks. So Strictly Diesel's in the north part of town. If you're up in that area, I would strongly suggest you develop a relationship with them. And Vicki, are you there?
Yes, I am, Mark.
Tell me, you get in the truck and then what do?
First thing I do, of course, is buckle my seatbelt.
Yes, ma'am.
And then I pump the gas twice.
Okay.
The owner's manual says to pump it once to set the choke. I pump it twice because I did that for 20 years on my 70 and it worked.
Okay.
And then I crank the ignition.
Okay, where's your foot when you're cranking the ignition? Is it on the throttle or not?
No, it's not.
Okay. Okay, you're exactly right. Here, let me explain. When you park the car, the float level's full, the bowl is full. I think that could be part of your problem. We could have, that quadrajet could have leaking wells on it. So overnight, it leaks all the carburetor, all the gas into the motor. The symptom to that is it takes forever to crank it over, but when I get it running, it blows lots of black smoke because the engine's flooded. And because the carburetor's leaking, and the reason why it's not starting is because we have to reprime the carburetor. We have to put gas into the carburetor in order to get to run. Your process is perfect. The very first time you push it to the keys on, by the way, you push it to the floor and you let go. That allows the choke butterfly to close. Now we've just shut off almost all the air, so we're going to get lots of fuel, and it'll start up. Then when it starts up, it'll start up and it'll go da 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 da, and then it'll go and it'll hold a good idle. The little stumble at the very beginning is normal. That's the choke pull off has just opened the choke flap a little bit. So there's this vacuum operated thing called a pull off, and it opens up the. Now you're also at high idle because when the choke shuts, it lifts up the fast idle cam. So when the choke goes closed, you're on fast idle. So you pump it 2-3 times, your keys on, you start it up, you don't touch the gas pedal, it should go da-da-da-da. Then you let it sit there for just a little while, maybe 60 seconds. Then you pop the throttle, it'll come down to idle, you put it in reverse, and you drive away. Every gray-haired guy in the world, on a 1 to 10, that difficulty is about a minus 40. Because every one of us has fixed those 1,000. Now, most of the time, I'd say 90% of the time, an adjustment to the choke flap or fixing the pull-off or something like that could be the problem. But as far as new carburetor or anything like that, I doubt it. Especially because you said before it ran fine. So I think we're just having a tough time getting it running. Now, we might have to take the carburetor off to fix the leaking well plugs. So we take the carb off, take the lid off of it, we flip it over, we take the base off of it. There's a couple of lead plugs there. They're leaking. We'll know it. We kind of grind them off, put a little JB Weld on them, let them dry 24 hours, put it all back together. And that's how we stop that carburetor from leaking gas all night long. So that's what I think it is. Where do you live?
23rd Avenue in Northern. I actually took my Jeep to you about 3 years ago to do the to change the evaporator on the air conditioner. I wish you were closer.
I understand that, but can I send you to Larry Harker's at 38th Avenue and Indian School? Because Larry, Bob there, him and I remember Fred Flintstone. So I guarantee you, he can do it.
I don't want to make David Hoffman at 25th Street Automotive jealous. We've been going there for 3 years.
No.
Yeah.
No,
he should be able to do it,
too. Billy. Billy at 25th Street Auto, I mean, he's a gray-haired guy, too. He's an old drag racer.
Yes.
Here's what I want you to do, though. I want you to arrange to drop it off and let them have it for the next morning, okay?
Oh.
Yeah. I want them to be able to start it because I need to see what's going on before I ever put the key in the ignition. So in the morning, I'm going to open up the hood, take the air cleaner off, and I'm going to look at the choke. It should be wide open. I'm going to throttle, doo-doo, and the choke doesn't shut. Or I throttle, and yes, it does. So then I take my fingers and I push on the choke pull off, and it opens it up. Ooh, then everything's working. Then I'm going to hit the key. It's going to start. And then I'm going to go, oh, that choke pull-off's not opening up the choke. Or there's no gas in it. There's no fuel in it because the accelerator pump isn't squirting. All of this is well known to us. So if you're going to go see Billy, tell him this. I bet you $10 he can't fix this. Just tell him that. Okay?
You know, the man I bought it from said, don't let anybody, and he was the second owner, don't let anybody work on it that doesn't have gray hair.
No, it's just, that's a way for me to describe our experience. We have a lot of, and see, the fundamentals of spark and fuel and air and compression haven't changed. The way we deliver fuel's changed. The way the air is delivered has changed slightly. The timing has changed slightly, but we're still advancing for power and retarding for, when you come to a stop. Everything's fundamentally the same. It's I don't know how else to explain it with respect. Lawnmowers. 100 years ago, we had a certain lawnmower. Now we have John Deere's with electric start and clutches and all that kind of stuff, the riding ones. Mm-hmm. So we have this graduation of enhancements,
right.
But they're just enhancements. The spark, fuel, and compression still got to get it running. So anyway, thank you very much, Vicki. Thank you for that great question. David, you're up next.
Thank you. I didn't know you knew about motorhomes. I thought you didn't like those.
You know what?
Some days he doesn't.
I don't like the poop tanks in them. I don't like to work on the poop tanks.
Okay.
I tell you
anyway,
what.
I'm looking at buying one.
Okay.
So do you do, a pre-purchase evaluations, that kind of thing?
Let me explain. It's in your best interest to get the motorhome and fill the black water and fill the gray water and have the propane system on where the refrigerator's fired up, and then make sure that the heater works, and you bring it to the shop, and when you do that, woo, it's a lot cheaper. Because we're looking for gray water leaks, black water leaks, we're making sure the furnace is going to work, we're going to make sure that the refrigerator works, we're going to make sure the stove works, then we fire up the generator, and we don't want you to fire up the generator, we want to fire up the generator, then we're going to make sure that it's putting out the voltage, we're going to make sure that the top air works, all of that kind of stuff. Then we're going to look at the motor and the transmission, and we're going to check the dash air, which is different than the roof air. The answer is yes, but if you'll do that in first, I mean, we'll save yourself a lot of money.
Okay. And probably make an appointment first, correct?
Yes. And you can wait for it if you want, but they're not going to let you in on Mondays or Fridays for obvious reasons. But
right, okay.
If you talk to Andy, Paul, or Daniel, you just say, I want to bring my motorhome in for a used car checkover, and I want to wait for it. And if possible, I'd like to go out into the bays, I'll keep my mouth shut, and I would like to watch them. And they're going to say fine. Mm-hmm. They're going to say fine.
Yeah, it's gonna take at least 2 hours to just, FYI. So.
And we have depending on, are you going to go after a Class A or Class B?
It's a Class A.
Okay, good. That's what we had both.
Workhorse chassis.
Okay, and workhorse chassis is fine. That's the Chevrolet part as opposed to the F53 on the Ford. How long do you think you're looking for?
I'm going to keep it for a while.
No. How long on the motorhome are you looking?
How many feet?
Yeah, how many feet?
35.
Okay, well, we got to hoist the lift that dog up so that they'll use that. That's why you call them in advance and you say, Mark said to make sure the hoist is available, or otherwise they'll have something else on there. And they leave it on there, and it makes me mad. Mm-hmm. Okay? All righty. Thank you very much, David. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you.
You bet. That's a good question.
Yep.
You know, motorhomes are like your house.
Mm-hmm.
Take your house and shake it for 100,000 miles and then tell me what's wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
We got compliments. Blackwell and I were together not too long ago.
Yes.
And just yesterday he called and he goes, some guy called up and he says, I need to make an appointment. He says, you and Salem were just completely out of control at that, talking about motorhomes.
You two together are, yes.
And I told people, we're cut from the same cloth.
Right.
That's all there is to it. We're cut from the same cloth. We had so much fun. I told him about the brown suds coming out of the vent on the black water tank.
Yes.
We talked about the black hose getting away from us and squirting like a fire hose. We talked about all kinds of fun stuff.
That sounds fun. Yeah.
It was worth it for us. I know I got Alan available, and I'm going to go ahead and get Alan. Alan, go right ahead. What can we do for you?
Yes, I recently picked up a 2002 Mercedes SL 500 with 109,000 miles on it. it's in beautiful shape, but I want to get the transmission fluid flushed and the filter changed, because I'm assuming it's never been done because it's got one of those, you know, lifetime sealed transmissions.
Yeah. 2 minutes.
Which are not lifetime sealed transmissions. Who would you recommend having to do that? And I live on the west side, and what's a ballpark cost of something like that?
You only have one choice. You go to Goodies in North Scottsdale.
Goodies in North Scottsdale.
Yep. I want to tell you something. He knows more about transmissions than any 400 people. Well, Mercedes. That guy, I've called him and asked him questions, and he says, well, do this. And then I come back, and he goes, well, the fix is right there, and take the door panel off the driver's side, and da-da-da, and the blue wire. Da, da. This guy is just a wizard. Now, he's not going to do that for people. He does it for me because I have pictures of him naked. But he's a good guy. And you call and make an appointment first.
I'm rolling my eyes again.
And
you wouldn't happen to know what the ballpark cost on something like that is.
No, I can tell you as far as a normal vehicle is concerned, you're likely to spend $200 or $300 to have it flushed. Now, if you're going to pull the pan and have it flushed, then that can really boost your ticket up, because basically you're doing twice, except you only have one fluid. So we say, if it's never been apart, let us pull the pan, let's change the filter, and let's look inside the pan. If there's nothing of concern,
right,
let's put the pan and fluid and a new filter in. Then you bring it back 30,000 miles later, and then we do the flush. But Goody will know.
Okay.
He'll know when he opens up the pan.
Thank you very much.
Goody will know when he opens up the pan whether or not it's ever been taken off.
Mm-hmm.
So if he sees quite a bit of clutch material in there, or God forbid he sees a broken snap ring or something, then he'll know whether this thing, and then he'll also know by the color, the texture, and the smell of the fluid. So he may say to you, I don't like the fluid, let's change the filter, and let's flush it. And that he may say that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Another good shop in town is Auto Dynamics in Sun City. Chuck Nide had opened that up in 1982. His son Derek, who he's very proud of, is now running that. And Derek's been around the auto repair business for a very long time. So if you're in Sun City, the only shop I recommend in Sun City or in the surrounding areas is Auto Dynamics. They're north of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. We'll be back. Twenty minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, my name is Mark Salem. Every Saturday from 10 to noon, we're here talking about cars. I don't think I've missed a single Saturday. Well, I missed a couple, but we replayed some of our best show.
Yes.
And, Gil, I'm going to give you the date on that Blackwell show, and you need to save that one, because that one was just, it was a couple of little boys in a Boy Scout tent or a Cub Scout tent talking about stuff that they shouldn't have.
Yep.
So it was a lot of fun. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa. It's the only shop that's been able to pass the test, pass the muster that I put every shop through to ensure that you get the best I can find. So in Mesa, there's probably other good shops out there, but Thompson's, in my opinion, is the best. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley. They have ASC-certified technician Brian and Thelma, both families. Both the Thompson and the Vivian family have been in Mesa since Jesus was a baby. So they've been around a very, very long time. So both of those young people have been around a long time. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Let's go to the phones. Tom, you're up next. Hi, Tom.
Okay. Yeah, hi. I was just taking off speakerphone. Okay. Yeah, I got the dummy award for the day. I just got home. Car's hot. Been driving it, so I thought I better check my oil and radiator fluid. I knew I'd be a little low on both of them, so I put the fluid in my overflow radiator reservoir. Then I proceeded to put antifreeze in my oil, and I could not believe that.
It's okay. My wife's done the same thing.
Forever. I guess it's the first time for everything. So my question is, all I need to do now is just drain my oil and just do an oil change?
You haven't started it, yes?
Oh, no. No, okay. I have not.
Oh, well, now think about this. Let's think about this together. Where's the water in the engine, and where's the oil in the engine? Who's sitting on top of who?
Well,
oil floats on water. Oil floats on water.
Right, exactly.
Okay. So you're going to pull the drain plug. You haven't started it, which is a really great thing. You're going to pull the drain plug. You're going to get the antifreeze first, and then you're going to get the oil. Then you're going to go inside and watch a football game or chase your wife around the coffee table. Whatever you want to do, let it drain for a while. If you want to be crazy, drive the lift the car up on the driver's side and let the fuel or the oil slosh to this side or that side. But if you just let it drain for an hour, put oil in it back in, it's fine. The first time that the engine gets to 220, which it will, then water boils at 212. So when the engine gets to 220, it turns the liquid to a vapor. The PCV valve sucks it out of the engine, out the tailpipe, and you're done. There's no harm, no foul. You'll be fine. Just do what we talked about, okay?
Yeah, I just figured I better do it while the oil's hot and not let it totally cool down.
You can do it hot or cold. It's not going to make any difference. If you let it sit all overnight, the water would definitely be at the bottom. The oil would definitely be at the top, and you're home free. So this is not a big deal.
Okay.
And you're not the only one that's done it. My wife's put diesel in her car, and my wife's done a lot of things that have kept me in business all of these years.
Oh, you're talking about you, because I don't do that.
Yeah. Okay, well, good luck to you. Thank you very much, Tom. And Chip, you're up next.
I'm looking for someone in the valley that can rebuild a 77 Camaro AC heater control switch.
Okay, there's lots of guys that won't have any trouble with that. What part of town are you in?
East Mesa.
Okay. Well, I'd call Thompson's first. But let me ask you a question. Tell me what it is that you say this is. What is it?
The 77 Camaro AC heater control switch. Both the fan and the master vacuum switch went out. The points inside
the
tube.
Okay, wait a minute. The heater control switch is a mechanical valve or a vacuum-operated valve that shuts hot water off to the heater, and it's the same box where the air conditioning's at. So a heater control valve on your 77 is underneath the hood. But what I hear you saying is that you can't get the fan to blow. Is that right?
Well, it's a four-speed fan, and it quit working on all the speeds but high.
Okay. Oh, piece of cake.
Turn the little switch.
Piece of cake. There's a fan resistor that sets 1, 2, and 3, but we bypass the fan resistor when we go to high. So you've done a wonderful job of looking at that. The only thing we need to do is make sure that either the blower motor resistor is bad or the switch is bad. Now, either one of those is a piece of cake. The resistor is outside the car in the evaporator case. There's three wires to it, two screws, and it comes out. You want to guess? Replace the fan resistor. But it has nothing to do with the fan motor. It has nothing to do with your air conditioning system. It has to do with either the fan switch, which is 1, 2, 3, 4, or it's the blower motor resistor in the evaporator case on the engine side. This is a piece of cake.
Okay, and you said Thompson Auto?
Yeah, Thompson's Auto Body, Main Street, just east of Stapley. Main Street, just east of Stapley. And what you do is you call him and say, hey, I've got a problem with my fan motor. I'm a 77 Camaro. I only have high, and I'm missing 1, 2, 3. Is that in your wheelhouse? Is that something you fixed before? I don't want anybody, some young kid wet behind the ears, working on my 77 Camaro. And just, you can jokingly say stuff like that, and the shop owner knows what you're asking. Okay?
Yeah, and it's yes. Thompson's Auto and Towing. It's not body. You
yeah,
said
Thompson.
Body.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Thompson's Auto and Towing. It's on the south side of Apache or Main Street, just a half a block east of Stapley. Mm. And so I'm sure you'll be happy with them.
Thank you.
All righty. Thank you very much. TOT Thompson's.
Now, would you rebuild that switch or would you just get a new one? Because he was saying rebuild it.
I know that. I didn't understand the rebuild part.
Okay.
But the key there was no 1, 2, 3, and I got high.
Okay.
Our Chevelle had the same problem. You
okay.
pull out the, you check to see if you can get the fan to give you 1, 2, 3, 4, and you can't. So then you take the air conditioning panel out, which is a piece of cake on a 77 Camaro, and then there's a blower switch there.
Okay.
So at that point, you've got some wires there. So you go to high. I've got the purple wire lit, and the fan's working. And so one is a yellow wire, two is a green wire, and three is a purple wire, and I got nothing. Then you take a jumper wire from a cigarette lighter or whatever, and you touch those three wires, and boom, boom, boom. You've got speeds 1, 2, 3, 4.
Okay.
So the blower motor switch.
Okay.
The blower motor switch is bad.
All right.
2 minutes.
All righty. And we got anybody else, Gil?
Lines
are wide open. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. This has been an old car day.
It has.
This is the day I can shine.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you have an old car,
I am.
You got an. You know what? I've been watching Gunsmoke on DirecTV, and they've got ad after ad after ad of the Medicare crap. I mean to tell you, there might be 10 television ads in between Matt shooting the guy and Matt giving him first aid.
Because all old people watch that show.
Oh,
they're
boy.
Appealing to you their audience.
Her, you can call her and comment to Renee if you're an old person and you just took offense to that. 480-598-1234. Ask for Renee or her voicemail.
Yeah.
There's other people. You know what? Our granddaughter was over at our house not too long ago. How old is Lexi?
Nine.
9 years old.
Nine.
So we were watching TV, and I happened to flip
one
it
minute.
To Gunsmoke.
Right.
The young kids don't know what guns. So Matt Dillon's out there beating people up and shooting people on. So Lexi went home, and she told her dad she wanted to watch Gunsmoke,
yeah.
which is my son.
Yeah.
And so he called us, and he goes, "What the heck did you do to my daughter to make her come home and say she wants to watch Gunsmoke?"
Yeah.
So
yeah.
you can say whatever you want, but I'm again. You want to comment to Renee? It's private. 480-598-1234 and just ask for Renee's extension. 480-598-1234. It's better than watching General Hospital the whole time of your life.
True.
I look at the tape stuff and it's General Hospital from 1942.
Oh, stop.
And you make me watch it and I say, "Well, who's married to this person?"
I don't make you watch it. Go.
I know, but you're in the middle of Judge Judy and some of those other really good
That's
shows.
That's you.
602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. Let me tell you about Blackwell Auto. Tom and I are the same. We were talking the other day, and both of us took auto mechanics in high school. Both of us were in the advanced class. Both of us had been kicked out of that class numerous times. However, here's the end of the story. Both of us were honored by having our auto mechanics teachers tell us they were proud of us and have our auto mechanics teacher patronize us.
Mm-hmm.
And so both of us have been forgiven by two guys that we made their life hell for a year. and my teacher was Ben Elkins, and he's since passed. His family is still here, and his wife still does business with us. But when Ben came to our shop and honored me to have me fix his car, that was an honor. I can't remember anything bigger.
Yep.
So anyway, Steve, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, I had a quick question. Just bought a 2016 Chevy Trek.
Okay.
And it's got 2,400 miles on it. Besides putting a fresh tank of premium gas in it, what would you recommend? Is there anything I need to do or should do or look at?
At 20,000 miles?
2,000.
Oh, 2,000.
2,400 miles.
Yeah. Oh, no. There's nothing, and I don't think you'll benefit from the premium gas for a variety of reasons. There's no benefit to it. You're going to spend extra money.
Right.
Your car's not going to love you anymore. And the timing and the computer of the car will eliminate any benefit. Let me explain. Regular gasoline, in an exaggerated way, one molecule ignites 1,000, and 1,000 ignite 1,000,000. So the boom is kind of short. On premium, in an exaggerated example, one ignites 2, 2 ignites 4, 4 ignites 6. So the boom is 1,000th of a second longer. And your computer won't let that happen anyway. So it's a false sense of security. Here's what I think you should do. If you want that car to last forever, don't overheat it. Don't run it low on oil. Look at what oil you're supposed to have, and it's on the oil cap of your car. And do that every, I think that's a synthetic, so you can do your oil changes every 8 to 10,000 miles. That's the, your car will love you. Every other oil change, you rotate the tires. You see when the fluids are going to be, the brake fluid, the power steering fluid, the transmission fluid. You find out what the manual says, because the manual is written by the guy that built the car, and just stay close to the manual, and that car will last you forever. And if you got a 16-year-old kid, let him drive your wife's car. All right?
Just had a concern about with it being so low miles and 4 years old. So I understand about the.
No.
I just thought maybe. Cool.
No, there's not. Let me flip the question around. Mark, what do you do on your cars? I drove them like I stole them. I make sure I go through a heat cycle. I don't baby them, but I don't abuse them. And at 2,000 miles, you haven't even gone around the girth of the earth because it's 25,000 miles around the equator. 2,000 miles is nothing. Here's the thing. We're polishing the motor during this period of time. Here's something you can't do. During this period of time, don't use your cruise control. Steady speed is the worst thing in the world for an engine that's trying to polish its internal workings. So stay off cruise control for 5,000 miles, you're home free.
Now, he just said 4 years old, and he hasn't. Have you done an oil change?
I just bought the car.
Because you say like every year, no matter what.
Well, if he just bought the car and he talked about it's 3 years old, then he has to plug into that.
Right.
But, you know, however the first guy drove it, he can recover from that.
Right.
Anyway, thank you, Steve. Got to move on. Hector, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Sorry about that. I have a 01 Nissan Sentra. Now, what happens periodically, it's like running over a tire. It just seems to, like stop really fast, and it does it rapidly, like two or three times, and then it runs normal right after that.
Now, this is that the suspension that you're feeling like you're running over a piece of wood?
Minutes.
Is it the suspension that's acting up or the engine?
I don't know if it's the engine, transmission. It's not the suspension, but it just feels like it's running over a tire, not a piece of wood. I'm sorry, like running over a tire. Have you ever run over a big tire that kind of like stops the car almost?
Yeah. Okay, this is one of those that you're going to have to take to a shop. Most of us will drive this real quick if you can demonstrate it. Otherwise, this is something that you might want to say on the next oil change. Describe what you're talking about. But if you're talking about running over a tire, this is something with the suspension. This is the suspension is collapsing, or one of the shocks is bad, one of the struts is bad, maybe one of the strut mounts is bad. And so if you can make a right turn and see if it happens, make a hard left turn and see when it happens, go fast and hit the brakes, see when it happens. If you can determine how to make it happen, you've saved yourself maybe $50 to $100 worth of diagnostic time. So in your particular case, what you're describing is that some reason or another, one of the tires is hopping up and down, which you describe as running over another tire. I don't think that's going to be a tough one if you can just kind of isolate how to make it happen. I got to run, but Eddie, you stay there, and we got open lines available, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We have four lines open. If you want to grab one, you can. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Forty-two minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, write down 111-33. Okay, we're gonna pick up the phones, but I want to tell you something real quick. Automatic Transmission Exchange has been around for a very, very long time. They're on Washington and 40th Street. Phil runs it. Phil's been around transmissions since the very early days of the Power Glides, which is in the early '60s or late '60s, early '70s of the Chevrolets. So if you're looking for the best transmission shop in Phoenix, may I suggest Automatic Transmission Exchange. Let's go to Eddie. Eddie, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
Hello? Yeah, so I got a 2012 VW Jetta. It's giving me the 2181 P code, which says thermostat. And I replaced the thermostat and the temperature sensor, and it's still giving me the code.
Okay. Well, the code just says that I think this is happening. So you can have a electric fan that's not working. Certainly the thermostat was a good guess. I don't know about the temperature switch might be a good guess. The temperature gauge is not a good guess. So the code just tells you the problems in Ohio. You got to track that down. You might, if you wanted to, get on the internet and see what some other people have done. But what you're doing is you're guessing based on somebody you've never met before. And I think that's a bad idea. Let me ask you a question. Do you have any drivability issues other than that dumb check engine light?
No, it drives fine.
Okay.
Idles fine.
All righty. The VW, there's someone out there right now that knows what he fixed that code. So
right.
If he wants to call in 602-508-0960, I don't know the answer to it. The code is obviously a cooling system code. But I don't know. But we plug our scanners in, and we can look and say, oh, well, here's the five things that talk to the computer about this. So we go test one, two, three. Oh, three's bad. Mm-hmm. So we clear the code. We replace number three. We go drive it, come back, and there is no sign of a code. And right. then we give it back to you. That's kind of how it works. But, Eddie, thank you very much for that. Hey, let me have my phone there.
Okay.
We were talking about some guy at the very beginning of the show that rubbed soap on a leak on his gas tank.
Mm-hmm.
And it lasted for 2 years.
Yeah.
And I kept stumbling over some saying. And yeah, so
about
one of,
going to a dance.
Yeah, about yeah. going to a dance. So one of my technicians, who's the best I've ever had, he writes, dance with the one that brung you.
Okay.
Dance with the one that brung you.
Glad he cleared that up.
Yeah.
And he doesn't even have gray hair like you.
but dance with the one that brung you, and that applies to that soap got you where you're at. Just stay with it.
Right.
And that's
right.
the relationship. And mm-hmm. if you don't like it, I don't care. Terry, good morning to you.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a 2002 PT Cruiser, and the door signal comes on when you push the brake or the accelerator.
Okay, the door
and it dings.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, it's as if a door is open.
Okay.
And I've greased all of them. I've slammed all of them, and it's still doing it. So okay. I don't know what the deal is.
What the problem is the computer is seeing that there's a switch on all the doors that tells the computer the door is closed or open. It's probably a switch
right.
problem. And so the technician has okay. to figure out which one of those is causing the problem. There's some of us old guys, if the switch is external, we'll put a bunch of masking tape on the metal portion of the door that normally hits the switch. Or we'll just take a big uh-huh. piece of masking tape or duct tape, and we'll just cover the switch completely so it cannot move. And as we do that one at a time, if you were a good customer of mine, that's exactly what we do. We just go in there and put a big piece of duct tape on the driver's door and then the passenger door and then the
okay.
two. And then
yeah.
once we push that switch in. Go ahead.
I know what you're saying. The rear doors have that kind of a switch, and so I have put the duct tape on there.
Okay.
And so it's got to be the passenger or the driver's, right?
I would bet a lot of money it's the driver's because that's the one that gets the most use.
Me
but
too.
If you don't find a switch, it could be inside the door on the latch. So it's either going to be inside mm-hmm. the door panel or it's going to be exterior where you can see it. But 99 times out of 100 when we have a bad door switch, then it's going to be the driver's door, which is the one that gets 90% of all the activity. So, but anyway, congratulations mm-hmm. on you knowing about duct tape and stuff and masking tape like that, because I would venture a guess that 90% of the women that I know, except for my wife, probably would not have done mm-hmm. that. So you probably come from a mechanical background. Am I right?
Well, I do, and I watched a YouTube.
Okay.
That's where I got the greasing one.
Okay.
My idea.
Okay. No, you did a good job. You did a good job, Terry, and I think that you... you know, if you need a job, come see me. And if you can change oil, we'll do that. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Terry. Thank you very much. Gay, you're up next. How can I help you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
We just purchased a 2005 Sequoia, and it has a problem with sometimes the running lights will stay on and drain the battery. And it was already taken to Toyota for a whole day, and they said it was fixed. Well... got it
home
and it wasn't
there. Okay. This is really easy. No matter whether it's my shop or my best friend's shop or a dealership or an independent shop or a chain store, you need to go back, and I want you to be polite but firm. I paid you to fix the courtesy lights or the parking lights so they didn't drain the battery, and I paid you this much money, and you said this is what would fix it. Evidently, and I'm sure you didn't do it on purpose, you didn't fix it. So I'm going to drop my car off, but I'm going to tell you that you're not allowed to spend any of my money at all until you call me. And that's exactly how I would handle it. That's how I would want my wife and my mother, and I don't even like my sister, so I'll skip them. But that's exactly how I would handle it. Now, you need to look them in the eye. You need to smile, but grit your teeth and make it very clear that you are slightly perturbed because they clearly didn't fix the problem you asked them to fix, and clearly you paid them something that didn't benefit you. So I think in a nice way you do that. Now, I don't care who it is, if it's a dealer or it's even my own shop. If I would say the same thing on my shop. Just go in, tell us you that, and we are going to have to re-diagnose it, and we're going to have to fix your car. Now, if it's less, we'll give you the money back. If it's more, we'll probably eat it, especially if you've been in a couple of times before that. So that's how most of us guys with gray hair would react to something like that. And frankly, this is what I would say to you if you got mad at me and start calling me names and using bad words. I'd say to you, Gay, you can't believe that we did this on purpose. This is a mistake. We misdiagnosed it, or we put a bad part in, or we just flat screwed up. So I'm going to say I'm sorry, and yes, we're going to look at it, and yes, we're going to fix it. But I just want you to know that you can't possibly believe we did this on purpose, and so I'm apologizing in advance for my mistake. Hopefully you'll hear that.
I will. It's not my nature to be unkind, so that won't be a problem. You don't
need to. All righty, Gay. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we got any other callers?
Nope, that's it.
Okay, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I got 8 minutes to get you in if you want to.
Couple more minutes, yeah.
You know, she said it wasn't her nature.
Yeah.
That's an admirable trait that I've never had before.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'll tell you a real quick story. Remember that washer machine we had a problem with? And we called the guy in, and he gave us like a $1,000 estimate or whatever it was. So I flipped it over, and I found that the belt was glazed, and so I fixed it myself. And then I didn't say anything until later.
Yeah.
And then after I made sure that you got 10 loads done and the symptoms were gone, then I called him up. Come to find out, he had a terrible reputation.
Okay.
He had all kinds of complaints just like mine, and then I found that they had opened a complaint at the Attorney General's office with respect to fraud.
Mm.
So I just politely called them. I filed my report. I gave them a copy of the repair order, and then I told them how I fixed it, and I told them I took a picture when the washer was upside down. Mm-hmm. I took a picture of the before and after.
Yeah.
And we got our money back.
Yeah.
I don't know how they got our money back, but we got our money back. Mm-hmm. Who's on the phone, Gil?
That would be John.
John, good morning.
Hello, Mark?
Yes, yeah. Go right ahead, sir.
Yes, quick question. I've got a 2019 Ram 1500 and a little over 7,000 miles on it, but the brakes started squeaking more at, like, higher speeds. And it's not garaged, so I don't know if it any like dust buildup or if you need to
okay.
get
I can help
brakes
you.
Cleaned. Or...
Okay, what I want you to do is when the brakes are squealing, I want you to keep your right foot exactly where it is on the throttle, and I want you to gently apply the brakes. And then if you're right, the squeal's going to go away, then you let go of the brakes, and then you drive another mile or so. And then you just see if the squeak comes back. Because what you're saying to me is it caused by the heavy moisture that we've had, the humidity that we've had? And the answer is yes. But if you drive down the road and you gently apply the brake pads are going to clean all the rust off of the rotors. Then it shouldn't happen for the rest of the day. So you could be very well right that the rotors are being contaminated by the weather. But I'm just saying, let's clean the rotors off and see if it comes back. Now, if it comes back, then if it's shaking the steering wheel left and right, it's on the front. If it's shaking the back, you feel it through your butt, then it's going to be in the back brakes, and somebody's going to have to go in there and figure out why we've got this pulsation, which is what you're describing. Does that make sense?
It does. Thank you.
All righty. Good luck to you, John. Thank you very much.
So you want him to be a two-footed driver for a minute.
You know what?
Well, you said keep it right there and then put on the brake, so.
You are the only one that picked it up that way. You know that?
I listened to you.
I could say that the dog is black, and you'd say, well, no, he's kind of tan. You know what I mean? My goodness. Folks, let me say in my defense, I've been married to this witch for 46 years. I'm teasing. They know that I'm teasing. For 46 years. I married her when she was 10. Who's next, Gil?
That would be Dale.
Dale, good morning.
Hey.
I wouldn't call her a witch if I was you.
That's right.
I did it with a smile on my face.
He's going to be in trouble later.
you have to start sleeping with one eye open.
Yeah, exactly.
I got all my guns locked up. Go ahead.
I got a motorhome. Okay. I got a motorhome, and I can't figure out air pressure. I've asked everybody at the RV places, and they say, oh, just look at the tire, and it tells you how much air pressure. I look at the manual, it says, well, you know, put in there what it says that what somebody wrote in the book. There's nothing anywhere about how much pressure to put in the tires.
I can fix this for you. There are two. Okay. Let's pretend that the front axle on your motorhome is the 12,000-pound axle, okay? We got two tires. Okay. Both of those tires better be able to carry 6,000 pounds. Now, those could be 8,000 pounds apiece, which means we have 16,000 pounds of tires supporting a 12,000-pound axle. So the manufacturer will look at the math and it'll say, well, instead of 80, I'm going to put you at 65 because at 65, those tires can carry the 12,000-pound axle. Here's what Mark says, and here's what Mark does on his motorhome. This is a piece of cake. I run every car I have at maximum inflation on the sidewall, and I'll tell you why.
Oh.
Number one, you get better fuel economy. Number two, the tire doesn't overheat. Number three, if your wife's driving the motorhome and she kisses a curb, there's less likely she's going to cut the sidewall with a fully inflated tire as opposed to one that's 10 to 20% less. All the benefits go to the tire. The other day I was looking at the garbage truck that came by to pick up the dumpster.
Yeah.
And I said, what kind of axle you got on the front of this? And he goes, I think it's a 14,000 pound. Well, I looked at the sticker on the door and it's 14. He's got two tires on the front of it that are 6,000 pounds.
Ooh,
so he's got 12,000 pounds of tires holding up a front end of a garbage truck that should have 16,000 or 14.
But Dale said he couldn't find it on the outside of the tire, so.
He can.
So on my tire, it says 80.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Bingo. You just stick at 80. And let me just qualify this. I'm a tire maintenance expert. I'm not an expert in the construction of tire, but the industry standards and the care of a tire, I'm an expert. I'm not telling you to do anything that I don't do to every car I own. Now, my wife at times, she calls me, and she had this all-wheel drive Tahoe, and she kissed the curb and just cut the sidewall of this tire. Here's the problem. On an all-wheel drive, you got to replace all four tires. You can't put a new one on there. So it was like $2,000 later that tire hit, and I had to put four new tires on her car.
I think you were driving that day.
No, I wasn't.
Okay.
No, I wasn't. And you know I wasn't. And it was at the gas station at Rural and Elliott on the northwest corner.
Then how would you know that if
I went
you
to change
driving?
Your tire? You called me and I changed your tire. I put your spare on.
All right.
You know, your memory's not very good. But anyway, I thank you very much for calling.
So,
that's a perfect answer.
So if I put 80 pounds in my tire cold and I get on the highway and it goes up to 90, is that a bad thing?
No, we built it that way. We already built it for all the heat you can generate. So that's why we want everybody to start at the cold temperature. It's not uncommon when I'm driving my truck and trailer up and down the mountain and I'm hauling horses, it's not uncommon for me to have a tire that's 120 to 130 degrees. I don't check my air pressure. I have a temperature gun, and when I get out, I got 20 tires to check. So I gun where the crown of the tire is, which is where the tread meets the sidewall. I have my temperature gun about a foot away. Dink! Dink, dink. People think I'm crazy. I'm taking the temperature of my tires. They'll be up a whole lot more than the ambient temperature, but that's built into the tire. So you don't need to worry about that.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah, I'll start doing that.
Okay.
Thank you.
You betcha. See, I get to show my motorhome experience all over again.
Yes.
You got any comments? You got 40 seconds to just beat me up as bad as you want.
Just because my last name is Salem doesn't mean I'm a witch.
Well, you're the only one that noticed that transition.
Mm-hmm.
I called you a witch, but I was hoping people would know that Salem. Okay.
Yes.
Salem witches. It's true
that I inherited that name. I wasn't born with it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, whatever. All righty. Well, am I as good as I think I am?
Oh, some days you are.
No, I'm not talking about behavior. I'm talking about cars.
Yeah, most of the time you are.
Okay.
And happy birthday to you this week, dear.
Shut up. Hey, we'll see you next Saturday. Goodbye, and Killer Mike.